Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to be here in this sunny place and very friendly experts here. As David asked me if I'm prepared for the assault by friends, I think it will all be very peaceful. So my task here is... my task is not an easy one, because I have to, after the excellent talk that Gregory gave a couple of weeks ago, I have first to stay to the same standards, keep to the same standards, which is not easy. Secondly, he picked the easy part of it and left the hard one for me, but I will try. So I apologize to those of you who were not in Gregory's talk, that I cannot repeat what he said. So, but my task would be, those of you who were there have seen this picture. So, and if they remember it, I have added theaters everywhere. So this will be my task. In fact, I will only concentrate on one link of this triality relation, this link, because this one, the relation to Wilson loops, is not totally clear at the moment. There are some doubts. And I think that later Gregory will try to give some explanations. But so let me remind you in a couple of words what kind of triality or sequence of duality relations we are considering here. Well, historically, the first one was found some years ago. It was between light-like Wilson loops and scattering amplitudes of a particular, the simplest possible type, MHV amplitudes. It was shown that by switching from momenta to so-called dual space or dual coordinates, one could establish a duality relation, which is almost an identity, but not quite, between the loop corrections to MHV amplitudes and Wilson loops on a light-like contour. And then lately, about a year ago, there was a new proposal to consider a new type of object. The Wilson loop is a, if you wish, a correlation function, but a non-local one, because it is defined on a, it's a functional of the contour on which it is defined. It was proposed about a year ago to look at a simpler, in my opinion, conceptually simpler object, which is the correlation function of local operators. Endpoint function of a particular type. I will specify this in a moment. And then this correlation function is considered in a special limit, in the limit in which the adjacent points of the operators become null separated, or light-like separated. And then we showed in a series of papers that there are two ways to take this singular light-like limit for bosonic correlators. One way leads to, again, to a Wilson loop on the light-like contour defined by these null-separated points. And the other limit, which is done directly in four dimensions and does not require any regulator, leads, again, to MHV amplitudes, or rather to their integrands. So this link was understood between bosonic correlation functions, light-like limit, and then you compare the integrand of the loop corrections to this correlation function to the integrand of the loop corrections to the MHV amplitude. And this worked very successfully. In fact, we were able to show that fairly sophisticated 5 and 6 point amplitudes, integrands for them, including the extremely complicated parity order sector, which is usually invisible because it's a total derivative. So if you integrate it, you don't see it. But if you don't integrate, the integrand contains a parity odd piece, which was predicted for amplitudes either by generalized unitarity or by this BCFW approach pursued by Kani-Hamed et al. And we were able to show by a direct calculation of 5 and 6 point bosonic correlators, including the parity odd part, that they were identical. It is quite impressive because these parity odd things are very, very complicated. So We have no explanation why this duality holds. We have an explanation why this link should hold in the bosonic case. It's a rather basic physical explanation, but for this one, this one should not even be called a duality. It should be called a relation, because the Wilson loop appears as a singular limit of the correlation function in a rather natural way. This is a true duality because it's unexpected, and we have no explanation for it yet, and probably there will be one, and it should be simpler, I guess. Most likely that these correlation functions satisfy recursion relations of the same type as BCFW, although the origin may be different. Now, so this was the story about 6 months ago, and then the obvious question was, what about, first of all, non-MHV amplitudes? Because MHV have a particularly simple trivial helicity structure. Non-MHV amplitudes are conveniently and conventionally described by superamplitudes. So it's natural to ask the question, if we supersymmetrize the amplitude, consider superamplitudes instead of just bosonic, can we equally supersymmetrize the other two objects in this relation? How to supersymmetrize them? And then, do the relations hold? This triality, is it still valid for super objects? Now, what I can say today is that we have a lot of evidence that this duality is still valid. Again, we don't have an explanation, but we have many explicit examples which show at tree level and at loop level, which show that this duality is exact. For trees, it's absolutely exact. For loops, it holds at the level of integrals. What concerns these two links, there is a question about the proper definition of the supersymmetric Wilson loop, or rather its quantum consistency, which has not been resolved yet. So naively, one would expect that this should work and also this should work, but that's not very clear.
You mean, you said it held at the level of the integrand. Do you mean including all regulator issues, like away from four dimensions? Or?
This one is done only in four dimensions. So the integrand is considered as a rational function of the momenta in four dimensions, no regulator, and the correlation function is also treated in the same way. But now, since we are going super, we can show non-trivial examples at tree level. For instance, take the NMHV tree here, which needs no regulator, and take the corresponding object here, which I will explain, compute them, and then the duality will be exact, and the no regulator issue is
easy. Upper duality on trees is including regulators?
It is. So
the level of integrated objects, then?
Yes, yes. So
tradition. The instruction to doing the link on the left-hand side at the level of integrated objects? No, not that one.
But no, this is just a different limit. This limit allows the object to stay non-singular, so the integrand is defined in four dimensions, and everything is conformal and superconformal in the calculation from the beginning to the end.
I guess I'm saying, if you want to complete the right hand side by going the long way around, then you really want the link at the level of integrated objects, right?
Stronger or weaker, because some people may say
that happens with the integrator, right?
Yes. Now, in very simple cases, I can say, let's say the 4.1 loop, I can say that what you say is probably true, but it's easier for us to see how the integrals appearing here become Wilson loops. In the very simple cases, where I may say that they become also the integrals of but the question is, how do you regulate? Because here you require an ultraviolet regulator, because the light-like limit creates ultraviolet divergences in the correlation function. Then at some point you have to switch, at least to switch the sign of the regulator. In this way, if you wish, you may say it works. But as usual, you know it from this duality. It's not an exact duality, because here you use an ultraviolet regulator, here you use an infrared. Yes, you have to change scheme.
Beyond two loops, but maybe beyond that you're saying it's more serious than that?
Beyond two loops, we have no evidence at all for these dualities. At the moment, we have some limited experience up to two loops. So I cannot make any general statements, but just we have experimental evidence. So this one should be at least at the moment understood at the level of integrants. Or for trees it is exact. That's the statement. So let me start with, very quickly remind you a few basic facts about superamplitudes. Then I will spend some time explaining what kind of supercorrelation function we have in mind here, and how it happens to be, manages to be dual to amplitudes. I will concentrate on the simplest example, which is NMHV3, where all these regulator issues are not relevant. But I will say a few words about integrants as well. So, superamplitudes. It equals 4 superannuals. This most people are familiar with, but I just, it's a quick reminder. Well, n equals 4 superannuals, we consider the vector multiplet, which is a complete multiplet in the sense that it spans all the helicities from plus 1 and to minus 1, so it is PCT self-conjugate. And it is convenient to combine them in what is called a super wave function or super state, which is a function of the particle momentum and of some additional Grassmann variable. So it has a Grassmann expansion, a polynomial expansion, and combines all the states of particles starting with gluons of positive helicity. Then you have gluinos of positive helicity, then you have scalars, the 6 scalars of n equals 4 superannuals, and it goes on, you have a cubic term which contains the other gluino, and then you have the last term is eta to the 4th, which contains the other gluon, negative helicity. Where here these etas are Grassmann variables. There are 4 of them because we have SU4 as the R symmetry of the theory. They have helicity 1/2, and they anticommute. They are Grassmann. So eta A anticommutator, eta B is 0. This is why this expansion is polynomial. What are the? They're introduced as a convenient way to pack together all the states of the supermultiplet, but this can also be interpreted as some kind of on-shell superspace. Which means the following. So you take. The on-shell superspace is defined by the particle momentum, which is light-like, and this can be solved in terms of commuting spinors, the so-called spinor helicity formalism. And then similarly for the supercharges, they can be realized, one of them, let's say the chiral, can be realized as a multiplication operator, and the anti-chiral is a differential operator. So this is a chiral realization of this on-shell supersymmetry with the usual supersymmetry algebra like this. So then the set of variables lambda, lambda tilde, and eta form the so-called on-shell superspace, which is, notice, and this is will be very important. Well, I will keep coming back to this point. Is a chiral on-shell superspace. So this chirality will be important. Now, the amplitudes, usual amplitudes for gluons, gluinos, and so on, are now replaced by superamplitudes, which are, let me call it AN. It's a function of all these superstates, N of them. And this should be considered as an expansion in the eters. in ether. In the powers of all these ethers. Now, this expansion is in fact organized by SU4 into various homogeneous polynomials. But before saying this, let me tell you, or remind you rather, what are the immediate implications of the on-shell supersymmetry in this case. On-shell supersymmetry means that the momenta, total momentum generator, should annihilate the amplitude, as well as half of the, because of the chiral realization, half of the supercharges, the chiral half, should annihilate the amplitude. And this has an immediate consequence, which is that the amplitude should contain conservation delta functions, one for the momentum, and another one for the supercharge. This one is, as usual, it is a Grassmann delta function, which means essentially a polynomial of degree 8. And then the rest of the amplitude is, as I said, organized in terms of homogeneous polynomials in the eta variables of degrees. First one is degree 0, second one is of degree 4, and so on. The last one is of degree 4n-4. So each of these e to the e with an index 4k endpoint object is a homogeneous polynomial of degree 4k, so symbolically eta to the power 4k. This is for reasons of SU4, because these eters have SU4 indices, and since they are only, say, in one chiral or fundamental representation of SU4, the only way to form invariants is to take four of them and contract them with an epsilon tensor. All these terms in this expansion have names, traditional names, which is in the case k equals 0, so degree 0 in the Grassmann variables. This is called the MHV amplitude. For k equals 1, or degree 4, it is called the next to MHV amplitude. And so on, the top term corresponds to the MHV bar amplitude. I recall that in this chiral description of superamplitudes, the PCT property, that MHV bar is the PCT conjugate of MHV, is not obvious, because this is MHV is the bottom term and MHV bar is the top term. So in order to show that they are related by PCT, you have to do some non-trivial operations. And the last thing which I want to mention here is the so-called ratio function, which is a useful concept. Here I have pulled out just the momentum and supercharge conservation deltas, but it turns out convenient to pull out the complete MHV amplitude together with its helicity factor or even loop corrections. And then this expansion goes in terms of again, homogeneous polynomials, but it starts with one now, and then the first non-trivial term is of degree 4, and the last one is of degree 4n-4. These are now finite, because all the infrared divergences sit in the MHV prefactor, and they're also of degree 4k, and then contain all the information about helicity is contained here for the non-trivial cases like non-MHV and so on. Okay, so this superamplitude is known to have a symmetry, an additional symmetry of dynamical origin, which is the so-called dual conformal, or because these are superamplitudes, superconformal symmetry. So I will not explain anything about the origin of this symmetry and so on. I just need to fix my notation. So I will draw by now a familiar picture. Here is the scattering amplitude with the particle momenta. And since now there is a super particles, they will have a super charge associated to each of them. P2 and so on. So this is the original super amplitude. And now I define what is called a dual space or superspace, which means inserting points. In fact, these points live in another, in a different space, but just to show how they are related to the momenta. In between each pair of adjacent momenta, I insert a point in superspace. And so on. And here is the last one. And then I connect them with lines, which will be light-like lines for the bosonic coordinates and a kind of super light-like for the fermionic coordinates. This defines the so-called chiral dual superspace. Why it is chiral is clear because the original description in terms of on-shell variables was chiral, so it is natural to have a chiral dual superspace which has coordinates x alpha alpha dot, theta a alpha, and say lambda alpha. And the way it is introduced, well, this is just a picture, but the actual way it is introduced is very simple. You just want to solve the conservation conditions. For the momenta, the sum of all momenta is zero. It can be solved by writing each momentum as the difference of two so-called dual coordinates. So they have nothing to do with the coordinates of the particles themselves, because they effectively these are momenta. So they live in some other space. And the way we actually solve this conservation condition is by declaring that the end points are identified, or in other words, that this contour here is closed at this point. So this is the way the bosonic dual space is introduced, and now we extend it to superspace by adding the supercharge conservation condition and solving it in the same way. The supercharge, I recall, is this, so it's lambda times eta. Then for each of them, lambda I alpha eta A I, I will write it as a difference of some super space coordinates, which are, I repeat, chiral, because these are chiral, with the same identification of the end points. So this just is a change of notation, if you wish, at this stage, nothing more than that. But it allows us to rewrite the amplitude in a way in which this new symmetry becomes manifest. And the new symmetry is a dual superconformal symmetry. So it is n equals 4 conformal supersymmetry, which is realized in the standard, absolutely standard way in this dual space, namely the super Poincaré part is realized by the usual generators, usual for a chiral description. So Q alpha is just the sum of d by d theta a alpha. Q alpha dot a is the sum of theta a alpha d by d x alpha dot alpha. And the momentum, I write these with capital letters just to distinguish them from the on-shell supersymmetry generators, which is completely independent and it's a different symmetry. So these are, as usual, the sum of all derivatives like that. And the algebra is the standard Q, Q bar gives P. So this is super Poincaré. And to complete it to super conformal, I have to, for instance, define the rules for conformal inversion. That's efficient because conformal group is Poincaré plus inversion, the same for the super conformal. And the rules for inversion are very simple. They are the usual inversion rules for bosonic coordinates, also the standard inversion rule for the fermionic coordinates. And what is new is how the lambda or helicity spinor coordinates transform. They transform in a similar way to the Grassmann coordinates. So all of this is done to allow us to rewrite these quantities here, these Rn quantities, as functions of the dual superspace variables. In fact, since I pulled out the MHV amplitude together with its helicity factor, all these terms here have no helicity, so they are, and they have no dimension, so they are conformal invariants and helicity invariant. Therefore, in fact, I don't really need the lambdas here because everything can be written in terms of only x's and thetas. And when they are rewritten in this form, one can show that they become manifestly dual super. Well, I will put it in parentheses because that's not an exact statement, conformal invariant. Why did I put this in parentheses? Because this, strictly speaking, only applies to the three amplitudes. The three super amplitudes have been shown to be exactly dual superconformal, all types, all number of particles, all types of trees. Whereas the loop corrections only retain the dual conformal symmetry, not the super. They break, for instance, they break part of the Poincaré, say Q bar. The anti-chiral Poincaré supersymmetry is broken by loop corrections. This is called a holomorphic anomaly or something like this. I believe that this issue is not fully understood yet. I think, I'm convinced there should be some other way of describing super amplitude such that the full supersymmetry is restored even at loop level. But that belongs to the future. So this was just a reminder about super amplitudes, this part of the triality relation. Now let me come to the main point of the relation, which is the correlation functions or the correlation super functions.
This is just only within the n equals 4 super Young's context. You cannot do this for n equals 2, for example.
There is no. I think the same question was asked to Gregory. There is no evidence. Maybe you asked it or somebody. There was. We have no evidence for dual superconformal symmetry in n equals 2. I think because there are no amplitudes, as far as I know, there are no. Nobody has computed amplitudes in finite n equals 2 theories, which are still conformal.
Yeah, exactly.
So the question is a good question, but somebody should compute these amplitudes at least at some very simple cases, and we can look at them. I may say I doubt that it will be true.
There are trivial examples.
Not for n equals 2 Young-Mills, n equals 2 finite theories with matter. Conformal.
You need to add. Those I think also are n equals 4.
They can be there. Well.
The one loop I think this is not.
Yes.
So there are trivial examples where amplitudes are known and finite and obey dual conformal symmetry.
N equals 2.
N equals 2, n equals 1. So n equals 2 were defaults of n equals 4. Amplitudes are trivially related to those of n equals 4. They're actually the same.
Are they the same?
Up to a trivial scale, just relabeling of fields.
Okay, because in a generic n equals 2 conformal theory, you add n equals 2 hypermultiplet matter in some representation. So you have a free parameter in the theory. So I am surprised that this has no effect on the amplitude. It should have some effect.
Yeah,
It has an effect on the anomalous dimensions, a rather dramatic effect, in fact.
These theories I'm referring to, they are very, very special. They don't really come with additional parameters. There are n equals to 1 theories that have additional parameters, but they, again, their amplitudes are the same.
As what I mean, I think Murat means also as well, is that there is a whole class of n equals 2 or even n equals 1 finite theories, conformal. So they're good questions. But I know one thing experimentally, maybe I'll come back to it when I talk about correlators. I know where something changes dramatically in the correlator if you go to n equals 2, 2. It's a small change, but it has a very strong effect, which makes me think that all that I say really strictly applies only to n equals 4, not n equals 2. But let me come back to this point. So correlation superfunctions. Well, for reasons, many reasons. First reason, convenience. Second reason, you will understand it a little bit later. Namely, I like to do Lagrangian insertions. I don't have a third reason, but well, I will only concentrate on a particular type of operators in n equals 4. This is the so-called n equals 4 stress tensor multiplet. But all that I'm saying here is probably valid for other types of multiplets. For instance, this one is known to be the simplest case of the so-called 1/2 BPS multiplets. And there is a whole family of them. So I'm more or less sure that all that I say will be valid for all of these how BPS multiplets. It just becomes more messy to work with and compute. It is likely, although we have only limited evidence, that this may apply even to, say, correlation functions of long multiplets, like Konishio, or mixed correlation, or any kind of correlation function. So the statement which I wanted to start with here is that correlation functions in a particular singular limit become amplitudes may apply to any kind of correlation functions, but it's by far most convenient and easy to compute and see how this works in this very special case. So I will stick to it, but I keep a door open for other possibilities. So what is this stress tensor multiplet? Has been extensively studied some 10 years ago. In a different context, it was the early ADA CFT when there was a conjecture that correlation functions of these multiplets and other multiplets are in fact due to ADA supergravity amplitudes. So you see amplitudes already appeared in the past, but in a different context. So these things were studied, their correlation functions were studied, and lots of, say, circumstantial evidence was obtained for such a duality to hold. But it was difficult to prove this duality because it's a strong coupling duality. So the conjecture is that the correlation functions of such multiplets or other multiplets are due to amplitudes for gravitons and other fields in ADS supergravity, but only at strong coupling. And there is no obvious way to how to make this work at weak coupling. Now, what we are proposing now is duality for the same objects, correlation functions of these stress tensor multiplets, but it's a weak coupling duality because it will be a perturbative duality. It's an interesting question whether the two can be somehow related. It's not obvious, but maybe it's possible. So these things have been studied a lot, and I just need to recall a few facts. There is a, say, a ground state or primary, whatever you prefer to call it. It's a very simple bosonic operator with four indices of SU4. It is made of the four scalars of the theory. But the scalars are, well, these are SU4 indices. This is anti-symmetric, so there are six of them. It's a bilinear operator, and you remove the SU4 trace by subtracting something like this. So this belongs to a particular representation of SU4, which is the representation 0 to 0, or it's also called the 20 prime of SU4. What is so special about this very simple scalar operator? What is, makes it special is that it is the primary or the ground state of a full multiplet. N equals 4 supermultiple. So you just apply N equals 4 on-shell supersymmetry transformations, and you can build the whole multiplet. And what is interesting is what is in this multiplet. So since I'm a superspace person, I will, and for this duality, actually, superspace is indispensable in order to show how superamplitudes become correlation functions. I have to use superspace. I just apologize for those who do not like superspace, but there is no choice. I will write down this multiplet as a superfield. It will be called T for a good reason, which you will see in a second. So it starts with this bosonic operator. Then it's a very long expansion. I will not show you all the terms. I will just show you two typical terms, but most important terms. One of them is at the level of theta is chiral for them. So it depends on both theta and theta bar. It's not a chiral object. So, but if you go into the theta direction, at the level theta to the fourth, you will find, quite remarkably, the Lagrangian of the theory. In fact, it's the on-shell Lagrangian. And then if you go on, there you will find at some level, which is non-chiral, the stress tensor of the theory, which is the reason why this multiplet is called the stress tensor multiplet, because it contains the stress tensor of the theory. It contains all the other currents, the supercurrents and the SU4 currents are contained. And most importantly for my purposes, it contains the Lagrangian. Now, there are various scientific ways to explain why this multiplet has a special property of being protected from quantum correction, so this is a protected multiplet. But I can give you just one very simple reason, specific to this multiplet. The reason is that it contains the stress tensor and the and other currents. And these are, in any theory, they are protected because of the conservation condition makes them protected from quantum corrections. In particular, they have no anomalous dimension, such objects. And moreover, one can say that there are two-point and even three-point functions, correlation functions, are not renormalized. Only starting with from four-point functions, you can see some interesting structure. But that's not all. So this is just a general feature of this multiplet. There is another one which is not immediately obvious, but that's what qualifies it as a half VPS multiplet. Now, what does it mean? In fact, it means something simple, and I will try to explain it schematically, but we'll not go into details. So it's called a half VPS short multiplet. Roughly speaking, it means that it depends only on half of the thetas and on the half of the theta bars. So which half? The way to show you which half, well, there is a more civilized way to do this, but I will do it brutally. I will just break SU4 down to SU2, cross SU2, cross U1. And then each of these indices, A, B, C, and so on, will break into a pair of indices and the charge. So plus or minus is the U1 charge, and A and A prime are the SU2 and the other SU2 indices. Now, let me apply this to the Grassmann variables here. So I will break the chiral theta into two pieces with the two different SU2 indices now and different U1 charges. And I will also break up the anti-chiral theta in a similar way into two pieces. And now I will declare that I want to throw away this piece from here, and I want to throw away this piece from there. And then my stress tensor multiplet, I declare it, but in fact it's a direct consequence of supersymmetry. If you maybe the simplest way, although it's not technically very easy, but the simplest way to convince yourself this is true is you start applying the supersymmetry transformations, and you will see that terms with this or this will never appear in the supersymmetry expansion. So the statement is that the stress tensor multiplet only depends on these halves of the Grassmann variables, not on the other ones. Since the other ones are the conjugates, this is the conjugate of that. We may call this an analytic object, or rather Grassmann analytic. It's a Grassmann analytic superfield. I insist on this point here because this notion of Grassmann analyticity is what replaced the familiar notion of chirality. You know that, but most people are familiar with n equals 1 supersymmetry, where the basic notion is chirality. You have chiral superfields, and you are happy with that. But if you go already to n equals 2 extended supersymmetry, chirality becomes not a real basic notion. It is replaced by this kind of notion of Grassmann analyticity, where the objects depend still on half of the Grassmann variables, but it's not the chiral half or anti-chiral. It's a half with respect to their R symmetry indices. So this is not chiral. This is important for what follows. And then, just as I said, this is not chiral, but our amplitudes are chiral. We have a chiral superspace here. I wrote it somewhere, so I insisted on the fact that this superspace is chiral, whereas the stress tensor multiplet is analytic. So if we want to make contact between the two, we have to do something. And this something is reluctantly for me. What I will do now, I will just tell you, just forget about this. So I told you to drop half of these Grassmann variables for a good reason. This is supersymmetry dictates that, this. But then I will tell you reluctantly, well, since the amplitudes are chiral, they don't know what theta bar is. Let's just drop this and consider only the chiral sector of this object, which means that I deliberately break half of the supersymmetry. Not because I like this, but because the super amplitude dictates it, imposes on me.
Couldn't you have done that for your transform of the super amplitude instead of breaking the explicit as you formula?
This is something which Yu-Tin Huang did recently. He tried to present a non-chiral formulation of super amplitudes. And we discussed it the other day. I was at UCLA, and we discussed with him, and we convinced ourselves that this is not good at all for making contact with correlation functions. There is some specific reason which I can tell you about later. But so I myself was very hopeful in the past that such a non-chiral formulation could be the best way to establish contact with correlators. But it seems it does not work. So we are condemned to be chiral. For the moment, at least, it looks like that. So we will set. So we restrict the stress tensor multiplet to the chiral sector. Although maybe later on one should go back and restore the theta bar dependence and see what happens. Then what I can say now is that the expansion of the stress tensor multiplet, which is very long here, becomes much shorter in this case. And here I will show you the two typical terms. So this is zero now. The first term is trace of phi plus plus phi plus plus. And the last term is now very short, the expansion. It stops at theta plus to the fourth, and here we find the Lagrangian. Whereas the first term, just to explain, we had the scalars phi AB. We broke SU4, so from that we take the projection plus A plus B. But because of anti-symmetry, this is epsilon AB phi plus plus. So we just take this projection, of which is the highest weight state, of, if you wish, of the 6 of SU4. So this is now our object. And what we are going to consider are the supercorrelation functions of this amputated stress tensor multiplet. I will call this Gn, so it will be a function of xi, theta plus I, and this is just the standard correlation function, so vacuum expectation value of the product of these superfields, theta plus 1, 0, and so on, up to the last one. And the bosonic correlators, which were studied previously, and you heard about in Gregory's talk, are just the special case of these when we set the thetas to 0. And I will introduce a notation for that. It will be Gn semicolon 0, which means the zero level in the Grassmann expansion. So this is just Gn at xi, and now even theta is set to 0. Let me tell you a few words about the Grassmann, the general Grassmann structure of this supercorrelation function. There are a few things which deserve comments. So the general structure.
It seems as though this supersymmetry here is not going to be fully realized if you don't have the rest of the, you know, the phi minus minus, I guess, what you would call it.
Oh. Yeah, you put your finger on something which I wanted to avoid, but since you put it, I said I brutally broke SU4. Since I'm a gentle person, I will not, normally in life I don't do this. I do what is called harmonic superspace, which means I do all these projections are done with the help of some additional bosonic variables called SU4 harmonic variables. So in fact, I never break SU4. I just take projections. It's like if you
so you're, yeah. You have some coset of this thing, and you're going to yes. integrate over the coset.
Yes, yes,
right?
Yes.
There's no such object on the amplitude side. So
very good, and that will come back in a moment when I compare. That will be a small technical issue, but it resolves itself automatically, which is a small miracle.
Is it because of the special kinematics?
Probably, yeah, this is, I think, mostly due to the special, but the issue which David mentioned, anticipated, is that the amplitudes know nothing about this. In fact, the natural way to define amplitudes is in momentum super-twisted space, which has manifest SU4 is not broken, and there are no such harmonic variables. So in order to establish the link, I need a change of variables from, in fact, these theta plus, which I naively call them theta plus. In fact, they have a hidden dependence on the coset, SU4 coset variables, which should disappear when we go to try to compare the amplitudes. The main reason why it disappears is that we have to divide this by the three-level correlator. I didn't say it, but I'm about to say it. And this takes away most of the SU4 structure in the light cone limit. So you're right, it's the light cone limit, which, because this thing, if you expand it in SU4, it has a horrendously complicated, if you have many points, imagine the tensor product of n times 20, is something very complicated. But in fact, the light cone limit only picks one of these structures, and that's the major simplification. There is another subtlety, which I don't think I will explain here, but in the end, all this harmonic dependence just disappears in the light cone limit, and we can compare to amplitudes indeed. So it's a good point to mention. So the Grassmann structure of this thing, the expansion in the thetas, has the following form. It's a sum from 0 to n minus 4. There is a, surprisingly, the coupling will appear here now, I will explain why. Where, so this is the Toft coupling. And now each of these terms is homogeneous in the Grassmann variables of degree 4k. Symbolically something like theta plus to the power 4k. So there are a few features which I need to comment here. First of all, why 4k? So that's the first obvious question. Why not any arbitrary power of theta? Why 4k? Well, the reason for that has to do with SU4, and SU4 has a center. Is a center which is Z4. So even if I broke the, even before breaking SU4 or harmonic projecting or whatever, the chiral Grassmann expansion of such correlation functions should respect this Z4 center, which means that only if we are non-chiral, then theta bar will be Z4 invariant. But if we are chiral, then only theta to the fourth can be invariant under this center. That's why the expansion is organized in powers of multiples of 4. Then another thing which I think deserves a special comment here is, why is the maximal value here not n but n minus 4? The reason has to do with the conformal supersymmetry. So we have the following conformal supersymmetry generators. In the chiral sector, we have the Poincaré supersymmetry, and we have the matching special conformal supersymmetry generators. And if you count their components, you will see that they can remove or gauge away. They can remove two full thetas, or in my case, the thetas was with SU4 index. Or in my case, since I'm using half thetas, they can remove four half thetas, thetas of the type theta plus A alpha. For instance, I can fix a gauge in which theta 1 plus A up to theta plus A 4 is 0. Then, in this gauge, by construction, each remaining theta, so each of the remaining theta a, I plus A with I running from 5 to n, will be a superconformal invariant. Or if you wish, you can go back and undo the superconformal transformation which fixes this gauge, then each of these thetas will become a full superconformal invariant. But you see that such super is a superconformal invariant. Such invariants exist only if you have at least 5 points. And the other thing which becomes clear now is that the correlation function, since it is superconformal, effectively depends not on n but on n minus 4 thetas. This is what explains the maximal value here. And the last thing, one thing which I want to mention here because it makes contact with apparently what Simon Caron-Yau is doing now, is that the existence of such independent superconformal invariants, if you have five or more points, which are totally unrelated to each other or to the bosonic piece by supersymmetry, is something to bear in mind when discussing how supersymmetry, chiral or non-chiral, can relate various pieces of the amplitudes. Just a comment to make. And last, why here is why the coupling? Why do we have this coupling here? This has to do with Lagrangian insertions, and I will explain it in a moment. So for the moment, this question remains open. Since I'm running out of time, well, don't have. I'll probably have to speed up a little bit. Don't have much left to say, but so. Let me try to Let me go back now to the amplitude for a moment. So this was the general structure of the correlation function. Now let me recall the general structure of the amplitude. I will rewrite the amplitude now in a slightly different fashion. I will pull out just the MHV tree. And what remains, I will call now A hat. So there will be A hat MHV plus A hat NMHV and so on. Where these scattered things are homogeneous, so NK to the KMHV is homogeneous of degree 4K in the Grassmann variables. In the original on-shell superspace variables, or in the dual superspace variables, or even better, and that's the relevant way to formulate things, use momentum supertwisters. These are not by now very well known, so I just recall the definition. So you have lambda alpha, then you have mu alpha dot, which is lambda alpha x alpha alpha dot, and you have the Grassmann variable chi a, which is lambda alpha theta alpha a. The advantage of this notation is that the dual superconformal symmetry becomes manifest. That's why they have been invented, so manifest dual conformal and even superconformal symmetry. And then the amplitude, or rather these quantities, the hatted quantities, will now be formulated as functions of the momentum supertwister variables. And they will be, well, as before, they will be homogeneous in the Grassmann variables of degree 4k. And here I can recall now what I told you about the correlation function. The various levels in the correlation function are also organized in such powers multiples of 4. So this, at least formally, makes the two things look similar. So this similarity is not just formal, but it can be made into a conjecture duality. I will formulate the duality now, and then I will tell you just a couple of words how it is in practice, how it is verified, and then I will finish. So the duality, which is a conjecture because for the moment we only have some experimental evidence based on calculations. Duality. So this duality involves taking a singular limit when the adjacent points in superspace become light-like separated, and similarly for the thetas. We take then this supercorrelation function as a function of x and theta plus. We divide it by the tree and bosonic tree. So throw away all the thetas. This is a function of x only. And compute the tree level. Why is this needed? I think Gregory explained it well in his talk. It is because the correlation function itself has propagator factors which give it conformal weight. It's not conformally invariant, it's covariant. And these factors become singular when the points are light-like separated. So you have to get rid of this by dividing by the tree, which removes all these pearl singularities. And in addition, as we anticipated, removes also most of the SU4 dependence, or this harmonic dependence. So in this limit, only one trivial SU4 structure remains, which makes it possible then to compare to amplitudes which do not have such sophisticated SU4 structure. So you do this on the left-hand side, and then on the right-hand side, the claim is that this is equal to the super amplitude squared. At the origin of the square, and not only squared, but there is an additional coupling dependence I have to insert here. The origin of the square, Gregory explained, it has to do with the fundamental versus adjoint representation. So the correlation function is made of fields from the SU n equals 4 vector multiplets, which are in the adjoint representation of the gauge group, whereas the amplitude is has to do with fundamental. So this square here is basically due to that. So how is this duality to be understood? At the level of trees, it's just an exact statement. You compute your trees here, you take the square, you compute the correlator at tree level, so this should be tree, divided by bosonic tree, take the limit, and then they just identically match. So this we know explicitly for any MHV trees for any number of points, and some other higher than any MHV, but with the limited number of points. At the level of loops,
an experimental statement.
Experimental. For NMHV trees, it's a full proof, exact proof. But for NNMHV, we have just a few cases with 6 points up to, because the calculations become difficult on the correlator side, because we are humble Feynman graph people. So this is certainly not the best way, as you know it. It's not the best way to compute amplitudes. Probably not the best way to compute correlators. There should be some better ways. But for the moment, we don't know anything else. So with Feynman graphs, that's how far we can go. So integrands at the level of loops. And here, once again, we have a fantastic agreement. Well, I don't exaggerate. Maybe using the word fantastic is a little bit too strong, but since the people who do this use such words very often, so I'm allowed in this context to put some exclamation marks. But the agreement is agreement is indeed very spectacular, because I cannot show you, but if you compute this parity auto sector, especially for non-MHV amplitudes, it's so complicated that we don't even have a closed form or expression for it. We have a mathematical file, and then Nima et al. Gave us their mathematical file, and we compared numerically, and it's the same. So that's very strong evidence that this is not an accident. Let me just show you very quickly, if I think can take 5 minutes. And then
what order are you talking about?
Any order. That should be true for, well, conjecture. Up to two loops. Two loops is just the bosonic, say. I should be more modest. But bosonic check
has... How many points?
Say, for trees, NMHV, any number. NNMHV, 6 points. And for, say, we have one loop, I think 6 points as well, NMHV, and maybe something, well, two loops is MHV, essentially. So the most difficult, the really spectacular is NMHV, 6 points, one loop. It was a long, difficult calculation for, on the correlator side. It gives the same integrand. Yes?
Could you comment then on this Mason and Skinner paper that recursively is claims to prove this in general?
Yeah, they claim, but then there are two things in their claim. First of all, it's all based on super Wilson loops. And this I give to Gregory to explain.
Okay, so they use that as an intermediate.
Exactly.
In the triangle you had, they go to the right first,
exactly.
And then they go to
exactly.
the left.
And then there are two problems in this. The Wilson loop, they claim, but lately they realized that they claim that they had no problem, no regularization, nothing. But this is not true, and they saw it lately that they do have a regularization problem, which they overlooked, and they don't know how to regularize. And even if they knew, then there is the difficult question, how do you go from twister space to Minkowski space? It's a very non-trivial integral transform things for singular objects. Many things can go wrong. So, okay, they claim, I have no more comments to make, but on our side, we have no, I admit, we have no understanding how this, why this works. We see how it works. Just to give you, not to stay on this abstract level, just to give you a flavor of how it works very quickly, I will show you how we match trees. So the tree, all point, all kind tree, we write it as the MHV tree in front, and then we have the so-called R invariants, which start at NMHV level and so on. Then the statement here is, since we have to take a square, so we take the endpoint correlator at tree level, but depending on x and theta, divided by tree level, but only x, take the limit. And the expectation is that this will be the square of this. So this should be squared, which if you expand it, and there is a coupling, the coupling appears here. So if you expand and organize in the powers of the coupling, I still haven't told you why the coupling, I'm about to tell you. Plus, say, a squared, here you will see the NNMHV plus NMHV squared. So this is, you see, this is rather, this for instance, and so on, is very non-trivial. So by doing explicit checks, we had to make sure that at level, so this is two loop level essentially, we not only see the NNMHV tree, but exactly this combination with the NMHV tree squared. And this is precisely what happens. So let me show you, just sketch, not even sketch, just mention how we show this, or how it looks like. Well, we have to compute this tree-level correlator at Grassmann level theta to the fourth. And we have to compute the tree, Grassmann level one, which is proportional to theta plus to the fourth. Now, I'm oversimplifying things, but still this is essentially what happens. I will show you a typical component of this computation. That's not the full computation, but it actually explains to a large extent what happens. To get to the level theta to the fourth, I can keep all points but one at level zero, where I will have these bosonic operators. At the last point, you remember, was somewhere there, but just to recall that the stress tensor multiplet starts with the bosonic and then ends with theta plus to the fourth times the Lagrangian. So at the last point, I will have the n equals 4 Lagrangian sitting, and it comes with its own theta plus to the fourth. So this will be a typical component in this correlator calculation, not the only one, but the most typical. Now let's look at it at the Feynman diagram. Finally, I can show you one single Feynman diagram. It has the following structure. So you put these O's everywhere, here as well. And here we put the Lagrangian at point N. And what this link here is not supposed to be light-like. All the other links are light-like. So this forms a light-like polygon with many scalar operators and the Lagrangian. And now this Lagrangian, at the lowest level in the coupling, this is just F minu squared. Now this F minu squared has to interact with scalar propagators. So the only way it can interact is something like this. And you see already that the lowest perturbative level in this calculation is already of level of order g squared. So this is order A. And this, in fact, explains this coupling here, which I mentioned before, where the coupling appears. Although this is a tree-level calculation, tree in the sense of Born level, and there are no loop integrals, no logs involved. It's a rational function. If you compute it, it's a rational function. Still, it does not exist at level g to the zero. It starts existing from level g squared, and that generalizes to say if I do the next level 2, 3, there's still 3, which will be say n minus 2 bosonic and 2 Lagrangians. This will be then of order a squared in the coupling. So this explains why to match the amplitude we have to insert an additional coupling dependence. Although we are still at 3 level, all the time at 3 level. This is of order a squared. Well, I will not explain how we show. So we have to compute this. We use various tricks to compute it most efficiently. Then we essential point is to make a change of variables from these theta plus, which are the normal variables for the correlator, to the momentum supertwisters of the amplitude. There is a way how to change variables. There is a one-to-one match already if you count the number of degrees of freedom. They are the same, 4k here, 4k there. And once you do all this, you find that this thing gives you precisely the NMHV tree. Something important, this calculation, these graphs and so on, will never produce individual single terms in the NMHV tree. You know that the NMHV tree is a sum of over many R invariants. So you will never see a single individual R invariant coming out of this calculation. You will only see the complete sum of them, which is the tree. This is interesting. So the duality is not something trivial. The duality only holds at the level of the just to finish one last word on the level of the complete calculation. The last word is that when here I showed you that in a way for the correlation function to insert include helicity into it, essentially what we do is Lagrangian insertions. But the at the level of the tree, the Lagrangian is situated on a light-like polygon together with the other operators. So if you want to go from MHV to NMHV, MHV is just a number of O's on a light-like polygon. NMHV means you switch on non-trivial helicity, means do one Lagrangian insertion, but keep the Lagrangian on the light-like polygon. However, I have an option not to keep the Lagrangian on the light-like polygon. I can, for instance, keep the Lagrangian point in an arbitrary position. Then, as you know, this generates loop correction. So Lagrangian insertion can be used to generate loop corrections as well. So one thing I showed you here is how you generate helicity structures, so to speak. But the normal use of the Lagrangian insertions is to generate loop corrections. And in fact, in this case, there is a very interesting interplay between loops and trees. Let me just show you one formula without explanations. If I want to compute the endpoint supercorrelate at one loop, what I will do is I will take the n plus 1 point correlator of stress tensor multiplet. So endpoint, I will add one more point, and then I will integrate over this point, d4xn plus 1, d4 theta plus n plus 1. You remember that the theta to the fourth component of this stress tensor here is just the Lagrangian. So what I did is just I did a Lagrangian insertion, integrated, which amounts, and this will be computed at tree level. This amounts to, in fact, computing the one loop correction to the endpoint correlation function. So, but this is nothing but the same object with one point more and at tree level. So you see that knowing this correlation function at tree level, I can generate both NMHV, non-MHV trees, whatever you want, or loop corrections. Just one example, and that's then I finish. Suppose I take this object with 5 points at tree level, then I have two options. Either I make a rectangle of bosonic operators and put my Lagrangian in an arbitrary position. This will correspond to the MHV3 four-point one loop. This Lagrangian will eventually be integrated, or if we compare integrands, I don't integrate, but I keep this point in an arbitrary position. Or the other option is to put the Lagrangian on a light like polygon, pentagon. I make a pentagon. The four O's are there, and the fifth point is the Lagrangian. So now they're all light like separated. And then this will be the NMHV, which is essentially MHV bar, but still looks like NMHV 3 with 5 points. And this goes on, so I can make more Lagrangian insertions. I will generate either trees of higher non-MHV degree with more points, or I will generate higher loop corrections to the MHV 3. That's the way that this duality works. So I'm sorry for being over time, but it's a very big subject, which is difficult to present in a short time. Thank you.